Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Are you one of many Americans who are tired of people being bullied and discriminated? You are not alone. Bullying has a rippling effect on the person who is being harassed and everyone associated with the bullied person. The targeted adult or child may have been physically or psychologically bullied. They often bring home their anguish with them, and this can have a crippling effect on everyone associated with the one who's being bullied or discriminated. It's time to shed some light on how to reduce bullying in the school systems, how to create safe and healthy work environments for employees. I blow the whistle on how to protect yourself if you're being bullied and educate listeners on their rights if they're being bullied or discriminated. I bring in the best experts who provide empowering strategies, tips on resiliency, how to handle the experience of being bullied or discriminated, how to heal and overcome the effects of being mistreated. If you are ready to gain knowledge and insights on bullying and discrimination, you are in the right place. Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Hi, I'm Dawn Westmoreland of the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Today, I have an attorney, a researcher, founder, and the president of the Workplace Violence Prevention Institute. Her name is Kathleen Bonix. Welcome, Kathleen.
Hello, Dawn. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
First thing I want to ask you, because I get asked all the time about the definition of bullying, but what is workplace violence?
I will defer, Dawn, to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. That's OSHA's definition. And Dawn, how OSHA defines workplace violence is as follows. Workplace violence is any act or threat of physical violence, harassment, intimidation, or other threatening, disruptive behavior that occurs at the work site. And Dawn, per OSHA, it ranges from threats and verbal abuse to physical assaults and even homicide. That's OSHA's definition of what workplace violence is, and I think it's a good definition to start with.
That's great. How would it compare to bullying? What's the difference between workplace violence and bullying?
I believe that bullying is a form of workplace violence, and I believe that it would fall under OSHA's definition for several reasons. Although OSHA does not specifically define bullying in its definition, it does, Dawn, say that harassment constitutes workplace violence, threats constitutes workplace violence, disruptive behavior constitutes workplace violence, and I believe that bullying could fit any and all of the aforementioned.
Well, thanks for defining that, because, you know, people always ask all the time the differences and such. Now, you have an impressive past. You're an HR executive in the past, and I guess you still have those skills, and you're also a consultant. What took you from being an HR executive to become an attorney, a researcher, and starting this nonprofit?
Well, Dawn, it's, you know, I think that a part of me, even though I am an attorney and I have had the pleasure of representing both plaintiffs and defendants at times, in employee-related and employment-related disputes. At my heart, I'm a researcher. I've always, always, always been interested in underlying, uncovering root causes, and most importantly, in prevention. I don't like when things get to the point where there's litigation or where there's an assault or even homicide. Do you know, Dawn, that OSHA tells us that homicide is the fourth leading cause of death in the workplace today, employees going to work and being murdered. I think that that is a shame. So I've always focused on prevention dating back to, and I'm going to date myself, Dawn, here, dating back to the 1990s. You know, I worked in HR, I worked my way up, and I was the, you know, I've always written about, lectured on, done training and development and anti-harassment and safety procedures. In the mid-1990s, I began my long career of research and writing when I wrote an article for what was then Nursing Spectrum. It's now nurse.com, a large organization for nursing professionals. And Dawn, it dealt with the harassment of our nation's nurses in the workplace. I was the first non-clinician that was published in that periodical. And wow. Unfortunately, it appears that things today, my nursing professional friends and colleagues and clients tell me that little has unfortunately changed in the 30 plus years since I first wrote that article. So I've always been interested in safety, in being proactive, identifying root causes, and hopefully remedying those root causes so that the bullying, the harassment, the assault, the threat, up to and including stalking and attempted homicide and homicide go away. Yeah. I believe, and we do at the WVPI, that the only solution, Dawn, in today's environment is prevention.
Yeah, absolutely. Prevention. I mean, just look at the Parkland shooting incident. I mean, there could have been prevention. So people like yourself that are getting out there, talking, sharing, educating people so they know what to do, where to go, where to get help. And you're about to have a symposium. Can we talk about your symposium in Orlando?
Thank you so much. May I speak just a little bit about how the WVPI, the Workplace Violence Prevention Institute, came about
and then
leading up to this symposium? Okay. So, Dawn, you know, back in the 1990s when I worked in the human resources field, you know, I worked on the safety committee. I had the honor of sitting on my company safety committee, and my former boss was just one. Wonderful. She was very proactive and very preventative and wanted to ensure that the workplace was as safe as possible for what was then a home health care company. And so back then, recalled we would have, you know, discussions, what's going on, Kathleen, in the workplace. And I would give a report on what would go on the old OSHA 200 log that would talk about occupational injuries or incidents or illnesses. And then that would lead into a discussion. Once in a while, we might see something like a few employees maybe shoving, or there might be words. There might be the odd incident where someone would become upset and pull out the performance review, the PIP, or the employee review from the supervisor's hands. This is backed on, I'm dating myself again, when these things were paper, you know, and not done online. And we would be shocked, Dawn. You know, we would sit as a team, and all of the department heads would be there, and we would be utterly shocked at those sorts of incidents. And fast forward, I became an attorney. I went to law school, went back to law school, was very interested in the entire EEOC process. I became involved with the investigations, if once in a while, when I was served in HR, either as the HR director or as a consultant for companies, I would become involved in the investigation so that we could help the attorney put together a response to the EEOC. And I got really interested in all of the EEO laws that I know you're familiar with and that protect the rights of workers. So I went to law school, and throughout I'm still writing, I'm still educating, I'm still doing educational seminars. I've written about whistleblower provision of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act a couple of times for the Florida Bar's Employment and Labor Council. And so doing these things, writing for Lorman, a lot of independent agencies out there that did education. And I want to fast forward to 2015 by then, been a lawyer then for about 10 years. And I started to, in my research, learn about just really egregious cases of workplace violence. And the one that really got to me, they're all tragic when it involves a killing or a murder.
Absolutely.
There was an incident back in the summer of 2015, Dawn. I don't know if you heard about it where you are in North Carolina, but this occurred up in Virginia with two young people that were interviewing for their television station a woman, and they were killed live while the television interview was happening, live on the air. Mm. So everyone saw these two young people being murdered. And as it turned out, it was a disgruntled former employee that had also been employed by that television station who had been involuntarily terminated approximately 2.5 years prior. He lied in wait and waited until he knew that they were live on air. They were at a remote location offsite from the TV station when they conducted this interview. He waited until he knew that the feed was live. He had a GoPro camera around his neck. He's filming these attacks.
Oh my goodness.
He then shot and killed the two young people the TV journalist, a woman by the name of Allison Parker, and the person that was photographing Adam Ward. He was the camera person, killed them. He shot and attempted to murder the woman who was being interviewed, and then he took off. He uploaded the film to YouTube. He went on to social media, Twitter, and he talked about what he did. He sent up a manifesto to ABC News. He did all of these things, and he was so disgruntled. As it turned out, with a lot of these incidents, they end in one of three ways per my research. It either ends with the person being captured, it ends with the individual committing suicide, mm-hmm. or it ends with the person perhaps dying in a car accident during the chase. In this case, the person took off and he was captured by police several hours later, but he died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Mm-hmm. So learned of this episode, Dawn, and I said, where have we as a nation come by 2015, where this is acceptable conduct, where someone would even think about the level of planning that had to go into all of this, Dawn? It just boggled the mind. And so I wrote about that case. And around that time, I got in touch with colleagues of mine who were employed in law enforcement, in HR, in security and safety, and who were like-minded, who believed that things were getting out of control in the workplace, and that prevention and that looking at some of the signs that we see, because no one just snaps. There are always signs, especially when it's employee on employee, and you have the benefit of seeing the person next to you, sort of as I know that you've spoken with Felix Nader, who's one of my associates on the WVPI. He talks about this rubber band just snapping, snapping, snapping until it breaks. We have the opportunity to see individuals in the workplace, and maybe it's starting with some threats and bullying and pushing and shoving. We're not saying that every incident, you know, ends in occupational murder, or even this one did, but there are warning signs, we believe. So I started to talk to a few people. We put together a think tank, and I called it the WVPI, and we had our first meeting in June of 2016. And we've met twice a year since then. I've established the WVPI as a not-for-profit organization. I did that in December of last year. And this year, as you've said, we're leading up to our symposium, which will be held in Orlando. It's the first time we're holding an event in Florida. We're very excited because we have a number of really good people who will be attending, including members of law enforcement, attorneys, HR professionals, safety professionals, members of the media, and most importantly, victims. I've always wanted victims' input in my research and everything that I've done with the WVPI for several reasons. Victims will be there as well. It's going to be held on the 10th of May, one month prior to the second anniversary of the tragedy that happened, the active shooter incident that happened at the Pulse nightclub, which is very close to where we're holding our event. It is by invitation only, mm-hmm. and we believe that we're going to come out of that event with some good recommendations and some things moving forward.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. You have some good speakers. I know who's speaking. Stuart Silverman, the attorney, is speaking, and you have also some other folks. Do you want to talk about who else is going to speak?
Yes, Stuart Silverman. I've known him for years. He's a great attorney, great voice. He is speaking on bullying. He's speaking on bullying in not only the workplace, but schools. And, you know, sometimes people say, well, you're the Workplace Violence Prevention Institute. Why are you branching out into school-based safety? Well, for two reasons. Number one, schools are where workplaces get their future workers and sometimes their current workers. In high school, you have a lot of students that work and then they go to school. But secondly, schools are also workplaces for faculty and for staff, including, you talked about the tragedy that occurred at Stoneman Douglas in February. There were three employees, staff members, who were murdered viciously that day, one of whom actually survived a tour of duty in Iraq, only to come home and to be murdered in one of our schools, in a very good school in Florida. Stuart will be talking about bullying from both a workplace violence perspective and also from a school perspective. I will be speaking, I will be providing a CLE accredited presentation for the attorneys in the audience that can earn some CLEs for their licensures here in Florida. And I am speaking about workplace violence and the law. And then finally, we're going to have a tremendous speaker, Doug Evans, who is the COO of an organization called Security Impact Group. Doug is a former special agent with the FBI, mm-hmm. and he will do an active shooter discussion that morning. So we have a great agenda planned. We are anticipating doing further, perhaps, as you said, panel discussions. I've done that before when we've held our meetings in New Jersey, and I anticipate doing something perhaps in the fall of this year by the WVPI, perhaps in South Florida, and integrating a panel discussion in that presentation.
Well, you set up a very powerful symposium. So going back to your research, I wanted to ask you, when you compare blue-collar workers to white-collar workers, is there a big difference in workplace violence?
You know, I've seen with respect to the research that I've done, and I've recently published a white paper, and it dealt with the worst of the worst, which is occupational murder, employee on employee. And in that, in looking at the 161 souls who were murdered, I also looked at other forms of workplace violence, from the threats and bullying and harassment and stalking up to and including attempted murder. And my research demonstrates that it's almost across the board. We've had blue-collar workers that are harassing other blue-collar workers. We've had white-collar workers who are harassing and bullying and engaging in workplace violence against other white-collar workers, and a combination of both. So it seems like it's across the board, all white-collar and blue-collar have been involved in workplace violence, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you also wrote a book called The Killer in the Next Cubicle. Can you tell the audience what the book is about?
I'd be delighted to, Dawn. It really encapsulates 30 years of my experience in this. It's a book, but I like to call it a white paper, and it's part one that I just published recently on Amazon. And what it is it started out, Dawn, with 34. When I started, after I learned of those egregious conduct that happened, that tragedy in Virginia, I started to look at, you know, a couple dozen, three dozen other occupational homicides, employee on employee. And I assembled, I think it was 34 to 37 by the time I did my presentation at the first meeting of the WVPI, which was called The Killer in the Next Cubicle. And in doing my research, I looked just across the country. I looked at incidents that happened and that involved grocery workers, physicians, and office workers, and HR, and just across the board. And when I learned of another incident, you know, sometimes I would speak within the course and scope of my research. I'd call the state attorney that was prosecuting the case of the accused murderer, or I might speak with law enforcement, first responders that responded to an incident involving workplace violence. And I heard a lot of times, oh, this really surprised us because workplace violence doesn't happen here. You know, it doesn't happen in our town, or it couldn't happen to me, and it did happen here. And it started to frustrate me because it seems as though we've put some blinders on as these incidents, and I learn of incident after incident happening. And my position is this is part of a growing tragedy of workplace violence that we're seeing across America. OSHA, I rely on them again. They estimate conservatively that 2 million Americans are subjected to workplace violence every year. And that is a conservative estimate, mm-hmm. because OSHA tells us that many cases go unreported. So as I spoke with, you know, I spoke with the first responders or the state attorneys or employers and would hear this, I became, I must say, a bit frustrated. And I said out loud, and I didn't know this, but my son, who has helped me in my research, and he's an artist, and I asked him to put together some type of a piece of artwork that I could use for my presentation called The Killer in the Next Cubicle, which was the first presentation I ever did for the WVPI. And one day, I don't know who I spoke with, but I hung up the phone. I said, do we really need for people to understand that this is a growing tragedy, that anyone is at risk, that this could happen to anyone, no one's immune, it can happen here, it is happening here, do we need to perhaps construct a wall, a memorial wall at OSHA, Department of Labor in Washington, D.C., where we can all go to every Labor Day and pay our respects to the Americans who have lost their lives in active duty in the workplace. And my son, he heard that, and as an artist, it impacted him. So what he did is, I didn't know this, but he took a lot of time. He took the names of the 34 to 37 original people in my study, and he wrote it very carefully in old English in his art room. And he constructed a little wall, and he presented it to me. That's the cover of my book. And little did I know that I would meet families of at least two of those victims, Caroline Nozel and Ryan Burse. And they are both family members are going to be at the event in Orlando on the 10th. So I over time, my research, I continued. I looked at more and more cases, and it was 161 that are in the original study. And I found that there are some contributing factors. There are some scenarios that I'm seeing over and over again in when I've profiled either the accused or the people who have been convicted or who pled guilty to murdering their coworkers. And I saw bullying just pop its ugly head up over and over and over again in these cases. Another seems to be situation that has popped up in these cases, a common theme, if you will, serious mental health issues on behalf of the shooters. And in most incidents, they have involved guns are the weapons of choice. And I'm not taking any sort of position, pro or against Second Amendment. That is a fact. In 161 of the cases, all but a few involved shootings. So we're seeing some common themes, and I've made some recommendations in my research in the book. We're going to be discussing it more at the symposium and further developing it. There will be a part two to the white paper that I anticipate I'll be publishing either the end of this year or the first quarter of 2019. And it's going to be going into what's the cost, because a lot of employers, you know, working in human resources, you know, we can make, as former human resources professional myself and you, you know, sometimes you can make recommendations to the C-suite people, the people that have the ability to integrate that or not in the workplace. One thing that I found that really speaks to, and I know that, you know, no one wants anyone hurt or injured or, you know, killed in the workplace, but one thing that seems to capture the attention of the insurance companies that insure the employers, as well as the C-suite, the COOs, the CEOs, the top decision maker, is what is the cost of a workplace violence lawsuit?
Yeah.
What is a settlement? What's a lawsuit if I have to go to trial? What's that cost? So I'm assembling those statistics, Dawn. These cases, many times, they run an important audience for us is the insurance community. I have just, I call it the WVPI, just published an article that was published this month, the April edition of Claims Magazine, and PNC, which is another insurance industry leading periodical, and it dealt with active shooter and what we can do from a preventative perspective. And we're talking to the insurance industry because these incidents can invoke life insurance if there's a death, a property insurance if the building or the workplace gets shot up, which the FBI tells us that 46% of all active shooter incidents happen at businesses, which are workplaces for people. So we have an article that's published right now, and several individuals from the WVPI have contributed, and it is available. I also have a link up on my website as well.
Great.
All about prevention, Dawn.
Yeah,
all about prevention.
It is. And, you know, I want to share, Kathleen, that 3 years ago, I was at a flea market really close to Asheville, North Carolina, and a young man shot another vendor. They were both vendors at this flea market. And I found out later, I was there at the time of the shooting, and I was way in the back, and it was the most terrifying thing, the craziest thing I've ever heard of. I found out later it was all over tools. fighting over tools. And so this young 20, 21 year old man shot this 60 something year old man who later died in the hospital. And I was witness to it. Well, a bunch of people were witness to it, all over tools. Now, how can somebody just snap over tools? I mean, that's not the workplace. It's a flea market, but it's just amazing that somebody would lose it and ruin the rest of their life to be in jail or prison for the rest of their life, unless maybe they have a mental health issue.
It could be, you know, and I want to defer to, I've had the pleasure of working alongside Dr. Robert Tannenbaum, who is a forensic psychologist, and he has presented at several of the WVPI past. As a matter of fact, he's presented at all of them, all four that we've had, the meetings that we've held. And I go to him many times when I'm publishing an article or I'm doing some research. And he is quoted in this article on active shooter prevention. And I asked him, Dr. Tannenbaum, this aggression that I've seen in my research, it's not just killing. When it's employee on employee, it is overkilling. It is not walking up to the supervisor in one of the cases that I researched and shooting him one time. It is walking up to the supervisor and shooting 30 times. Emptying your bullet, going in and killing everybody. I said, where is this aggression and where is this rage coming from? And I would recommend that the audience read what Dr. Tannenbaum said. I would, to just paraphrase him if I could, the way he looks at it and the way I look at these relationships is that, and many employers, they call the workplace a family. You know, how many times have we heard, oh, our workplace, our workers are like family to us. Where workplace violence is concerned and this aggression, Dr. Tannenbaum puts it like this, you know, if you have a situation where someone is, feels that he or she has been slighted, or if they are now suspended from work or terminated, and they go home and they perceive of the coworkers who are like family to them siding with the employer, it's almost like a domestic situation. Then they look at the family members siding with the ex. And he says that there can be very deep-seated feelings of loss, of pain, of anger, of now, you know, you are now siding with the ex, so you have now turned on me. That could be one reason why we're seeing such violence. The situation that you've described, you know, although I'm not familiar with it, but it's, you know, these are tools. You're going to end someone's life over tools. I doubt that, you know, people just snap like that. At least in the cases that I've researched, there's all sorts of just dots that need to be recognized as a potential for aggression. Several of the killers that I have researched have gone on the internet and they have published disturbing content. One went on the internet before he went on a shooting rampage and went into work and shot and killed three people. And then himself last year, he published just vile and just angry content on his YouTube channel and elsewhere, talking of his love for the Columbine killers, posing with his shotguns that he later used to bring into work to murder three innocent people, kissing them, naming them like Eric Harris, one of the Columbine killers, did. You know, we've got to look at, if we see this and we know, what I recommend to employers is if you want to know what's going on in your workplace, go no further than ask your employees. They know. They're in and out of each other's lives. They're looking at each other's Facebooks. They're socializing with each other. They know. They're going to be in a position to tell you if someone is going through a bankruptcy or if they have a domestic issue. Not that you want to necessarily know that information, but it may explain why we're seeing a change in behavior. And certainly if a coworker is publishing that type of disturbing content and it is reported, there's a possibility we can get in there, interventions, recommend that the employee go to the EAP, the Employee Assistance Program, which I think is grossly underused in this country. And it may be the last stop before an employee snaps, that rubber band snaps, like, to quote Felix again, happens many times.
Yeah. And I do believe in the EAP, but I know a lot of especially the federal government, has their EAPs internal, and people are reluctant because of the stigma.
Sure.
So if they're having a mental health issue problem, a lot of them don't want their supervisors, HR, the management to know about it, but it could also be something that
Sure.
really saves somebody's life.
It absolutely can, and I recommend, a WVP, I recommend that EAPs be external to the organization for what you've just talked about. Number one, even when it is external, Dawn, employees are reluctant, as you say, to avail themselves of, and it could be a wide array of services. It could be access to mental health at a discounted and sometimes a free rate, or it could be help in other areas that they may be experiencing problems that I've seen as a contributing factor. I've seen over and over again in workplace violence, which is domestic violence. You know, when they have domestic issues, these issues a lot of times are not kept at the front door and will go into the workplace, unfortunately. EAP can be a tremendous benefit and can help to prevent things from going to the next level. It's important, I recommend to our employers out there that may be listening to this, please publicize that you have an EAP. It should not be a paragraph on page 72 of the employee handbook that the employee signs for when they're hired and it's never addressed again. Let them know that it is confidential, that it's not going to then result in a report to the employer, that they can go and speak with licensed professionals and maybe get the help that they need. Sometimes just talking about things, like Dr. Tannenbaum has said over and over again, can be so beneficial to someone who's suffering and can help potentially prevent things from going to the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100% with you. Now, to quote a colleague, Claire Knowles, she talks about HR stands for huge responsibility. What do you think HR should be doing every day when it comes to preventing workplace violence?
I have a tremendous respect for Claire. She has been, she's been involved in WVPI. She will also be at the May 10th meeting. I have tremendous respect for her. She's presented in the past, including leading panels discussions for the WVPI. I think that HR must be recognized as a, not just a place, a door, a place where handbooks are handed out and we do new employee orientation, but is a strategic and important part of the organization. Strategic, have the same voice as anyone else does who sits on senior management. You know, Dawn, we talked about, and going back in, you know, I want to say the days past, we talked about wanting and fighting for a chair at executive council, so that when there were meetings held of the CEO, COO, and so forth, that HR would also be there and have an equal say. That is critically important. HR, in my estimation, my experience, knows what's going on. Sometimes they may or may not be given the authority or the power or the same voice as, let's say, the head of marketing, who's responsible for bringing in monies if we're talking about a for-profit organization, or the head, the CIO, the technical, so important to companies. HR should be out there gathering the information, being proactive, conducting the training and development, making recommendations for education, being a place that talks about, if you have information that you're concerned about employee safety, please come here or go to, per policy, whoever the other options are for that employee, because it might be the HR manager. We don't see it very often happening, but it may be the HR manager that's responsible for the harassment or the bullying or whatever the case may be. This is why you want to give the employee, when you have that grievance procedure, other options to go to. Head of safety, loss prevention, CEO, we want to give them, or call this outside 1-800 number. So there's various options. We want that process so that employees can come forward, not only for their own concerns, if they have safety concerns for themselves, if they are being bullied, if they are being harassed. We want them to feel empowered to go to whoever the person or people are empowered to receive these complaints about anything that they experience or see external, such as if they see an employee who is putting up disturbing content on the internet, that they feel free and they know that they will not be retaliated against. And this is the next point that is so important, Dawn. If we drop the ball one time when we're receiving and investigating these complaints, that process will be broken. Other employees will look and they will feel chilled. They will not, probably not go forward and bring those concerns and complaints when they're small problems. You know, we want to deal with them when they're small and minor problems and hopefully eradicate them before they get to be major concerns.
Yes, absolutely. And let me correct, the last name of Claire is Knowles, not Nowles. So I apologize about that error. But let me ask you, you know, we're talking heavy, deep stuff, Kathleen. How do you keep balance in all this? How are you able to go to sleep at night with all this heaviness? It's such, so much darkness, so much heaviness. How do you find your balance in your life?
Oh, great, great question. I find my balance from, you know, a variety of things. I do a lot of exercising, do some things with my family. I love artwork. I love to read. And believe it or not, it's actually the victims who provide me with balance many times. Because as I said, from the beginning, I've always wanted, and my vision for the WVPI was to bring together a multidisciplinary team of top-notch professionals to look at this growing tragedy that we have in the workplace and make recommendations for root cause problems and for prevention. And you know, I speak with my, you know, victims that do come to me. We want them to have a voice. We want them to feel empowered. We do guest blogs where people can talk about their experiences. And I think that that's important, very important, because for anyone that's in the middle of something right now, and I have represented employees in the past, and I can tell you without going into detail and violating attorney-client privilege, but I've had employees, they have suffered psychologically, they have suffered physically, because here they are, they're being harassed, they're being retaliated against for being a whistleblower, or there's a constructive discharge going on. They want this employee to quit rather than to resign and then have to, you know, maybe pay them some compensation. Yeah. And as you see the employee struggling and trying to go into work every day, and they're suffering, and then it becomes, you know, it impacts the family, because it's very difficult. If you're not happy at work, it's hard to be happy at home, because we Americans work a lot of hours. And it's until you kind of go and work, if you've ever been overseas and you see, people in Europe have months off, they have bank holidays. We work a lot of hours and a lot of time. Being able to be a place where the victims can come and feel empowered, and they get their confidence back, because this is my experience has been, when you are the victim of bullying or harassment or other form of workplace violence, it impacts your confidence as well, and it really beats you down. So to be able to give them a voice, a place to come, and to be able to build back that confidence, and to then show that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I have gone on and I'm a stronger and better person today. To those individuals who may be struggling right now and thinking, how do I get out of this? I cannot tell you how much joy that gives me. And that gives me so much balance and pleasure in life. That's the most rewarding part of what I do.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing that. And I like how you brought up the comparison of Europe and Americans, because, you know, I've lived in Belgium, I've lived in southern France, I was in the Air Force at the time. And yeah, I mean, it's a more relaxed, we're not always doing busy work like we do here in America, where we always feel like we have to be doing something, and we're so conditioned over there. I remember being in southern France, and it took me almost a month to chill out. And once I was there almost 9 months, and by the time I left, I didn't want to go back to the U.S. because I really enjoyed the slowing down, the community, the family, just enjoying life. And I think that's really what it's all about, is enjoying life. And this has been a wonderful educational experience talking to you. I look forward to being at your symposium. I have purchased your book. And what I'd like you to share with the listeners is any information about your website, how to contact you, how to reach out to you, how to buy your book.
Oh, thank you. Yes, Dawn. First, the killer in the next cubicle, as I said, it's 30 years of my experience in I like to call it a white paper slash book, and it's part one. It's available as a download on Amazon. And it talks about the ultimate workplace violence and the ultimate tragedy of 161 employee and employee murders that have happened from 2010 through 2018. Our website, the Workplace Violence Prevention Institute, we are a not-for-profit Florida corporation, www.workplaceviolenceprevention.org. And our email is info@workplaceviolenceprevention.org. We have a couple of seats available for the symposium on May 10th. It is invite only. And if your listeners are in the Florida area and in Orlando, if they would be interested in receiving information about that event or others that we're going to be conducting later in the year, please visit our website or drop us an email. And do visit the website. We have a lot of information. I have a YouTube channel that I call 180 Seconds, where I try to talk about all types of issues dealing with in employment law and from an educational perspective, workplace violence, human resources, where I talk about different topics in 3 minutes or less. Our attention span is not like, remember 60 Minutes TV show? I think it's still on.
Yes, I do.
We got to keep it, brief. So we have a lot of information, guest bloggers. I've written about my research, and there's links to articles that we've written, discussions about previous educational and upcoming events. And I do welcome your listeners to please, surf the web and stop on by.
Yes, I encourage people to check you out too, also on LinkedIn. And you have a lot of experience. I love what you're doing, Kathleen. I appreciate the work you're doing. I'm sure the listeners will too. And people who already know you appreciate you. Thank you for being on the show. And again, thank you again for all the wonderful work you're doing to help humanity.
Thank you, Dawn. It was a pleasure. And I do look forward to meeting you in Orlando.
Yes, yes. And to our listeners, stay empowered, come back, listen again. We're here to help you. Thank you for listening to the Empowered Whistleblower. As your host, I will continue to bring in the best experts to share their knowledge and empower our listeners. Nobody has to feel like a victim. There are solutions to bullying and discrimination. Everyone deserves to be treated with respect and dignity. All our future shows will offer practical guidance so that anyone can choose to stand up to bullying and discrimination. You deserve to be happy, and life is all about choices. I always welcome comments and suggestions for new shows. Please comment and share your ideas, and be sure to come back for more inspiration and empowerment. I am Dawn Marie Westmoreland signing off and wishing you much happiness and empowerment in your day.